Good afternoon and welcome to Midday. Today on this tragic day in the city of Baltimore, in Anne Arundel County and Baltimore County in the state of Maryland, the Francis Scott Key Bridge had a terrible, terrible tragedy occur there this morning at about 1:30 in the morning. A cargo ship headed to Sri Lanka rammed into the bridge, hit a pylon, and the bridge collapsed within seconds. There's video of this bridge coming down. If you haven't seen it yet, it's really, really quite stunning. Today on Midday, we're going to talk about what we know to date, the investigation into what happened in this crash, obviously in its very early stages. We're going to begin with Matt Bush, the WYPR news director who was at the bridge this morning. Matt, about what time did you get there?
I was there probably about 3:30, so about 2 hours after it had occurred.
And, of course, it's still dark there. The sun, at that time, the sun hadn't come up. What did you see?
We couldn't see really anything at that point. But when we all arrived, the Maryland Transportation Administration PIO, who was there to greet us, said, well, this is the ramp that goes up to the bridge. It's on the Dundalk side of the bridge. This is the ramp, and that's where whatever is left of the bridge is out there. Because at that point, not even sure they really knew. And it was kind of tough to really gauge the scope of this until the sun had come up, and that was around 7 o'clock. And once it did, then you could see from our vantage point right there, we could see the ship stuck, we could see all the cargo containers, and we could see the steel trusses in the water on the one on each side of the bridge. So that was it. It just, as it, you know, unveiled itself that in the morning, it was stunning.
Yeah, it is stunning. And, of course, there is video of the ship actually just, you know, rammed into the bridge and stopped there. I understand from a press conference that the governor and some others, the Secretary of Transportation here in Maryland, held about 2.5 hours ago, that there was a mayday call from the ship to authorities right before the crash. What do we know about that?
So what that essentially did was that this ship was able to say it was in distress. I'm giving a mayday call. Don't know necessarily what it said, but said it was in distress. If you look at the video, again, this is just from what the video appears to be, it appears the ship was losing power and did so multiple times. But by doing that, giving that distress call, that allowed the state to shut down traffic onto the bridge. So, you know, it was at 1:30 in the morning. There wasn't a lot of traffic on the bridge to begin with. But by being able to shut down the traffic going to it when this mayday call was made, that stopped even more cars from being on the bridge.
And Secretary Weidenfeld, Paul Weidenfeld, who is the Secretary of Transportation here in Maryland, mentioned that there are 8 people who evidently were thrown from the bridge during the crash. 2 of them have been accounted for.
Yeah.
One of them actually even refused medical treatment, did not go to the hospital. The other in the hospital. What do we know about those 2 victims who evidently have been
Right. They appear to be from the – there was a construction crew on the bridge patching potholes. These 2 apparently that were recovered appear to be from that construction crew, but there are still 6 that are still missing at this hour. You know, the Patapsco is about 50 feet deep there. Underneath the bridge, and the water temperatures be in the 40s because that's what the air temperatures were about, so it's pretty cold, and we're now about 10 and a half hours from this happening, so the sense of urgency to find whomever may be still in the water only grows.
Yeah, and this is a race against time because obviously if you're in the water at that point, at this point, it's going to be very difficult to survive. There are also reports of sonar picking up vehicular underneath the water.
That came in the original press conference that happened this morning with Baltimore city officials, the fire chief and the mayor, saying that there had been sonar that detected vehicles in the car or vehicles in the water. How many, don't know. We heard a lot of numbers all morning on how many vehicles were on the bridge at the time it collapsed.
So what we really don't know at this point is if there were people driving across the bridge at the time of the impact and whether or not those people and their vehicles were thrown into the water. The governor did mention the mayday call and how authorities took immediate action. Here's what Governor Moore had to say at a press conference a couple of hours ago.
Now, the thing that we know is that, you know, even as the boat was coming in, you know, we had a ship that was coming in at 8 knots. So coming in at a very rapid speed. We do know that the investigation is currently going on. But I have to say I'm thankful for the folks who once the, you know, once the warning came up and once notification came up that there was a mayday, who literally by being able to stop cars from coming over the bridge. These people are heroes. They saved lives last. They saved lives last night.
So, if you happen to be on your way across the Francis Scott Key Bridge this morning at around 1:30, perhaps some of those workers were able to stop you. And we should stress that the workers were on the bridge fixing potholes.
Yes,
they were not working on any structural issues.
Right. I think that was said multiple times this morning that this bridge did not have any structural issues with it. It had passed its codes and its most recent tests, and wasn't, by bridge standards, wasn't particularly old. It was first opened to traffic in 1977, so it wasn't particularly old.
And the FBI was also part of that press conference this morning. Obviously, they are concerned with bridges. This is something that they keep an eye on as perhaps targets of terrorist activities. What do we know about that?
So there's nothing in this from the FBI and from the other officials who spoke that said this is that there's no indications that this was terrorism or that this was intentional in any way, that all signs point to this being an accident. To that end, while the FBI was there, the National Transportation Safety Board is the one who will be conducting the investigation, as they do after any transportation accident. They'll be holding a press conference actually coming up about at the top of the hour here, and we have a reporter there who will be covering that, so it'll be the first time we get to hear from them. But they probably won't have much to say right now, but they will be the ones conducting the investigation.
Matt Bush is WIPR's news director. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to a special edition of Midday. We're talking about the tragic collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge this morning at about 1:30 this morning. A ship headed to Sri Lanka, the ship is called the Dali, D-A-L-I, rammed into the pylons supporting the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and within seconds, the bridge went into the Patapsco River. We'd like to hear what you're thinking these days, what you're thinking today on this tragic day about the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Is it a bridge you frequent? Is that part of 695 that you are finding yourself on with frequency or not? Tell us what you're feeling right now. I think there is a collective sadness and feeling of trauma throughout our state today. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email as well, midday@wipr.org. The Port of Baltimore, the ninth busiest port in the United States of America. A lot of cargo goes in and out. This ship, you can see from the video, is just packed. I mean, there were the cargo containers were stacked up 9, 10, 11 high. It was amazing to see just how much they get on these ships. We are told that the crew of 22 people on the ship, there's no one injured on the ship, as far as we know.
No one injured on the ship. No.
Yeah, but again, there are at least six people unaccounted for who were members of the work crew that were fixing potholes on the Key Bridge. In terms of other shipping activity at the Port of Baltimore at this point, where does that stand?
It's suspended, and I would have to think it's going to be suspended for a while because they will have to, you know, once the search efforts end, they'll have to do damage assessments and have to do, you know, investigations for the accident investigation. They'll have to do lots of work on that. And then they'll have to clean up what's in the water right now. And then they'll have to move that ship at the same time, too. And if it has no power, that could be a while because it's a very large ship with a lot of cargo on it. So it could be a long time before the shipping at the Port of Baltimore continues. Now, the port is open. A lot of trucks, all the truck traffic that comes in and out of the port, that's still happening and would only seem to increase in the coming weeks and months. As I was driving out of there today, I was caught up in some of the truck traffic coming out of the port. That's still going on. It's just the shipping right now that has stopped.
Now, in terms of the trucks, there are truck, as you said, there's truck traffic going in and out. However, there's certain kinds of cargo that trucks are not allowed to carry because they've got to go through the two tunnels that are there. So there are these two other alternative routes to get to the port through the tunnels, but there are certain kinds of materials that are not allowed in the tunnels.
Yeah, so the preferred, one of the first messages that went out today, too, was just for traffic to say, please don't use 695, please now use 95 and 895, the Fort McHenry or Baltimore Harbor tunnels. That's good as long as you're not a tractor trailer carrying hazardous materials. They're not allowed to go through those tunnels. The Key Bridge was their route that they would take to go to wherever they were going. Being that 95 and up and down the Eastern Seaboard, such a busy trucking corridor, That's going to be another thing that's going to have a huge impact from this, is what ends up happening, that you're going to see a lot of delays in a lot of things, and a lot of trucking and shipping coming out of this, that I don't think everybody's quite wrapped their head around right now, because they're so in such shock over the incident itself. But we're going to feel this, and not just here. I mean, we're going to feel this internationally, quite frankly. This is such a large port that there's going to be, you know, there's going to be impacts on this for a while.
Yeah, so the economic impact potentially could be just really, really huge.
I think it's still fresh in everyone's mind, the, you know, the supply chain issues we had post-pandemic. These wouldn't seem to come anywhere near that, but we do know how much of a problem they were, and there should be, particularly with shipping, if the port's going to be hauled up for weeks or months with no one being able to get in and out of it, how much that might, you know, impact the supply chain, or just all the things that go through the commerce in the United States. Yeah.
Now, when we look at the video of the crash, because there was some there was a camera trained on it, which I assume is trained on it all the time. Again, this happened at around 1:30 in the morning. You see a large part of the bridge collapse. I mean, and it happens immediately. It just it takes literally a matter of seconds for that whole thing to end up in the water. But was it the whole bridge itself? Is there any part of the bridge that is going to be salvageable?
Right. So for those who've driven it, they know the highway ramps that go up to the bridge. The part that collapsed is where all the steel truss parts were. That's all gone. That's all in the water. The two highway ramps that come up to, which I believe are part of the bridge, they are still there.
Governor Moore has declared a state of emergency in the state of Maryland, and Mayor Brandon Scott has also declared a state of emergency in the city. In the press conference that was held very early this morning, probably around 6:15 this morning, here's what Mayor Scott had to say.
But never would you think that you would see, physically see, the Key Bridge tumble down like that. It looked like something out of an action movie. And you just think about, most importantly, which is what we all should be thinking about right now, nothing but those families and people that are impacted, and those people who are risking their lives right now, from not just Baltimore City and Baltimore County, but all over the state, to try to save lives. That should be our focus, the preservation of life.
And again, Matt, as you mentioned, it is really a race against time for the six people who are at the moment unaccounted for. Perhaps that number will increase. Let's hope not. But if they're in the water, it's going to be tough finding them alive, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been almost about 10 and a half hours now, and it's cold, and it's deep there, 50 feet deep again. So it's a race against time right now. There's urgency.
All right. Matt Bush is the WYPR news director. Thank you for your reporting on this morning. Of course, the news team is going to be on top of it for a long time. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Thank you.
The NTSB, as Matt mentioned, is holding a press conference later today. President Joe Biden scheduled to address the nation about the terrible collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Sometime during this hour, we will bring all of this to you. And let me tell you this special programming note. Tonight at 5 o'clock, during All Things Considered, we'll have a half-hour special on the latest of what we know about the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Tonight at 5 o'clock here on 88.1 WYPR. Joining me now is Dr. Mehdi Shokuyan. He is an associate professor in the Department of Civil Engineering at Morgan State University. Dr. Shokuyan, welcome to the show. Thank you for your time.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me, Tom.
And what can you tell us about the health of this bridge? You're trained as a structural engineer. Bridges are, you know, people keep track of how things are doing, and they rate them. They make sure that they're okay. What do we know about the Francis Scott Key Bridge?
As you may know, we have an ASCE report card for all infrastructure systems within the United States. One particular branch of that are bridges that are evaluated based on the inspection reports that they have. And, overall, bridges nationwide has a rate of C, basically. But in Maryland, the condition of bridges is even better than the average of national bridges. So Our rate here in Maryland is B for our bridges, and the condition of bridges that we have, basically approximately 5% of the Maryland's bridges are listed as a poor condition, only 5%, as compared to the national average, which is 8.4%. So the condition of this bridge particularly was very good. I heard something about the some inspection report that they had for a particular pier that was basically hit by this cargo ship. But the condition of that can definitely be monitored, and you know, particular repair or maintenance that is required for that can be considered. But the problem, more importantly with that, was the impact that was received from that cargo ship. So that was a huge force that hit the, you know, the bridge pier. Regardless of the condition of that pier, which was not very bad, but you know, that force could cause this situation that happened, unfortunately, to this bridge. And,
so yeah, so there's no, just to make sure that everybody understands, is there a way of designing a bridge to be able to withstand the impact of something as large as a cargo ship? This thing is more than 900 feet long, and it weighed somewhere in the vicinity of 150,000 tons. I mean, it was very heavy, very big. Is there a way, are there bridges anywhere that are designed to be able to withstand an impact of an object that large?
You know, when we are designing bridges, basically we consider different types of loading condition, like dead load, live load, you know, the traffic load, environmental load, such as seismic, wind. For these particular types of bridges, we also consider some hydraulic loads, so also scour loads and impact loads. So the impact loads can be from the trucks or can be from the ships. But, you know, even for that, in the standards, we have some numbers that we cannot really particularly cover the forces of that amount that basically this bridge was hit last night. So if we want to do that, basically, you know, bridge engineers definitely can do that, but that would be very costly, and the capital cost of that bridge in the very beginning would be very costly. And this kind of incident, you know, can be controlled more with more like cost-effective way, you know, if we consider some like preventive way for providing the effective navigation system for the ships to like prevent that not from happening, these kind of incidents.
Yeah, and of course, the investigation is in its very, very early nascent stages. It does appear that the ship perhaps lost power, at least intermittently. Perhaps the power had something to do with the navigation system. So, Dr. Shakunian, this bridge was built, if they began construction in 1972, they finished it in 1977. So that's 40-something years ago.
Yes.
Were there things about, you know, what we knew about structural engineering in the 1970s, you know, that have been improved upon? We know a lot more, I would assume, about engineering now than we did then. Do you think the particular age of the bridge could have had anything to do with the tragedy we witnessed this morning?
I don't think that, the knowledge that we had from the structural engineering that we implemented at you know, the time that this bridge was basically designed and constructed could you know, significantly impact the performance of this structure over this long time. And considering that you know, we have an average of 50-year lifespan of the bridges, and the average for Maryland is about 48 years, which this one is even, you know, not reaching to that average for Maryland bridges. So the condition of bridge, as I said, was not really bad, and I mean not bad at all. So, but the situation that happens was very unique for these kind of bridges. I mean, we have this situation. We have had it. Here in United States, also around the world. But so as I said, some sort of like a preventive method or approaches can help, you know, mitigating this kind of incidents. So for this particular bridge, as you said, so this was open to traffic in 1977. Things that is unique about this bridge is that the main span of this bridge was 1,200 feet. That was basically the third longest span of any continuous truss system in the world. So this was something that was very, very unique about this bridge. And of course, the condition of that we have in FHWA, basically Federal Highway Administration, have a you know, regular maintenance and inspection. So every 24 months for all bridges, at least. So and all of those inspections that we had basically showing the bridge health condition was not bad at all. So, but as I said, the incident that we had was very unique.
So bridges are inspected every 2 years, every 24
yes.
months. And you yes. do you think that's adequate? Is that frequent enough in your view?
You know, so definitely when the bridges are getting older, so I'm, you know, passing that 50 years, so they need more attention. So in terms of maybe more frequent, you know, maintenance and the inspection that we can have, but definitely that can help identifying if there are some, you know, some particular members, the structural members, or some particular part of the bridge, either from the piers or abutments or so anywhere, so has any particular issue that can immediately address that this kind of incident potentially doesn't happen. Of course, as I said, the bridge condition for this particular bridge was definitely okay, but this incident basically implied like a very huge force at the you know, the bridge pier, and you know, all engineers and structural, specifically structural engineers, knows about the impact of lateral or any vertical displacement on any kind of support that we have for bridges. So this means that even if we have no load, no traffic load, no wind load, no seismic load, we just a small movement in the support that we have, all of the structural members that we have, including all of those like tiny truss members that we have for this particular steel truss bridge, so could be affected. And the stress can go, you know, beyond the strength of the material and yeah. can cause the collapse and failure.
Yes, that's exactly what has happened today. We've had a terrible collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Dr. Mehdi Shakuyan, Associate Professor, Department of the Civil Department of Civil Engineering over at Morgan State. Thank you, Dr. Shakuyan. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll speak with Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski, Jr. Again, it's a special edition of Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'd love to get your reactions, your feelings on this tragic day in our state. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org. More on the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge when we come back from a break. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Another programming reminder today at 5 o'clock during All Things Considered. We'll have a half-hour special from the WIPR news team about the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which occurred at 1:30 this morning. A cargo ship called the Dali, headed to Sri Lanka from the port of Baltimore, crashed into the bridge, which collapsed immediately into the Patapsco River. Joining me now, Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski, Jr. Mr. County Executive, welcome.
Thanks, Tom.
It's a somber day. What are you hearing from your constituents in Dundalk and in the vicinity of the Key Bridge?
Yeah, somber day indeed. I think that summarizes the feeling. There's a sense of loss and mourning, not only of concern over those who were working on the bridge, and, you know, worry about the recovery efforts that are ongoing there. But also I'm hearing, you know, what I feel. This is both painful and it's also very personal. This is a bridge that is iconic. It's a bridge that many have, you know, used on a daily basis, including myself. It's a bridge where, you know, people have been under it on the water, over it on vehicles, and just become a part of our culture here in southeastern Baltimore County and in the Baltimore region. So, you know, our hearts and prayers, our heart is open to, and our prayers go out to the families of those who we're still searching for the individual whom we did find, and the one individual who was off the bridge. But it's just personal, it's tragic, and it's hard to believe that this has happened still.
And again, Secretary of Transportation here in Maryland, Paul Wiedefeld, says that at this juncture there are 6 people who are unaccounted for. Have you received an update, a briefing from federal officials or state officials? Anything new to report since you participated in the press conference this morning a little bit after 6?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually still on site at the command center here near the bridge. And throughout the day, I've actually had a conversation with Secretary Buttigieg, as well as Governor Moore and President Biden. Also had a conversation with the president earlier today, just talking about our recovery efforts, but also the needs beyond today, too. And I really appreciate everyone's well wishes and desire to be helpful. I can say we just recently just actually finished an update here at the command center. We do know that we believe there are 8 individuals of interest. One was able to get off of the bridge safely and refused any additional need for service. One individual was retrieved from the water and is in the hospital currently, I believe in serious condition. And then we know that we believe that there are 6 other individuals, as the secretary said, for whom the search efforts are ongoing currently.
And there were reports this morning of sonar picking up the presence of vehicles in the water. The crew that was working filling potholes, Secretary Wiedefeld seemed to indicate that the 6 people who are unaccounted for at this point were part of that work crew on the bridge. Do we know anything about why some vehicles evidently ended up in the water? Do we know if there were people driving across the bridge at the time of the impact?
Yeah, we know that there were work crews on the bridge doing basic maintenance, like potholes. There was no infrastructure work going on at the time. But what I can say is we do know that side scanning sonar has detected cars that were on the bridge that are still under the water. I know that we have identified one vehicle that divers actually have been able to investigate. It was found to be empty. No one was in that vehicle. There was a second one that they have identified as a vehicle that they want to get to, but divers have not been able to get to yet. But beyond those 2 vehicles, it's an investigation that is ongoing. And we certainly want to keep providing as much accurate, up-to-date information as we possibly can to you and your listeners and the general public.
And the economic impact of this, beyond the tragedy of the lives that may end up being lost, and again, it's still too early. We don't know the status of the individuals that have not yet been accounted for, and we pray that the outcome is good. But the economic impact and the disruption to transportation here is going to be really quite severe for quite a long time, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. In the days and weeks ahead, we certainly expect there to be significant impact on our families, on regional traffic, on commerce. We are already working closely with state and federal partners to make sure that whatever we can control and whatever we can do, we're going to support everyone impacted. Those are conversations that I talked to the president about, for the port, for example. The importance of doing the search, rescue, and recovery first really is our priority. But as soon as we're beyond that, turning to and being ready to clear those shipping channels to get ships moving again, and thinking about the impact on our, you know, shore workers and people who are impacted by supply chain issues. But, you know, again, we certainly are thinking about and planning for those things. That's what good emergency management entails. But our true emphasis is really at this point trying to identify and find and, recover the remaining six individuals that we know are still missing.
Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski Jr., he's at the command center down near what remains, and it's very little of what remains, of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Mr. County Executive, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
And let's go to the phones. We have Paul on the line who used to live in Baltimore. So I'm told, Paul, welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Hey, Tom. Good to hear your voice, and sorry about this tragedy. I was up at 2:30 this morning, and so I just happened to see the video online, and it was just, like you said earlier, stunning and tragic and disturbing. And I lived in Seattle for a while, and two of my good friends were pilots. And I don't know if there's not a lot of talk about the pilot's role right now, but the pilot's job is to help bring the ship into and out of the harbor. So when ships come from around the world, they don't bring the ship all the way in. They're guided by these folks, men and women, who go to the side of the ship and climb up sometimes 40 feet in and guide the boat in and out of the harbor. And they're highly skilled. It takes rigid training to actually become a pilot. And we have an incredible record in this country as far as having ships come in and out. And, you know, we don't think about it until it happens. But I just wanted to bring that up, you know, in the midst of tragedy. You know, I think it's important to actually acknowledge that it is a surprise, because it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, you make a really good point, Paul. I appreciate the call. And my understanding is exactly what your understanding is. Robert Sumwalt was on CBS television this morning. He's a former chair of the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, and he talked about the training that pilots receive. Sometimes it's as long as 7 years. And Paul's exactly right. The captain of the ship is called the Dolly. It's registered in Singapore. It was on its way from here in Baltimore to Singapore, to Sri Lanka. The captain of the ship does not guide the ship out of the harbor, nor did he guide the ship into the harbor. The captain of the ship was to take over command of the ship after the pilot, who was a local person, guided the ship out of the harbor. So obviously something went wrong this morning. We don't know what that is. It's too early. The investigation has just begun. But it is a local pilot, a person who has putatively done this many, many times, knows that harbor like the back of his hand, like the back of her hand. The pilots are a very important part of this process. As Paul mentioned, it's highly unusual for something like this to happen, because the pilots are so well trained and so well versed in the vagaries of the port. Let's take one more call before we go to a quick break. Then we're going to be joined by Dr. Vittoria DeLuccia. She's a psychiatrist at Shepherd Pratt Hospital. We'll talk about the trauma that I think everybody is feeling today on this tragic day. Let's go to Tom in Mount Vernon. Tom, always nice to hear from you.
Yeah, good afternoon. I think in looking at the photographs of the Key Bridge, it's obvious that the pier lacked adequate dolphin protection. Dolphins are huge concrete piles that are built around the piers to protect them from a ship impact. If you look at the pictures of the Key Bridge, there's two lonely dolphins on either side of that pier, which is insufficient. Many bridges today are being retrofitted with robust concrete dolphins to actually act as bumpers or deflectors if a ship hits and near a pier, to prevent the pier from being hit. In fact, right now, the Delaware Memorial Bridge has plans to have huge dolphins put around their piers. And also, several years ago, the Sunshine Skyline Parkway in Tampa, Florida, was hit by a ship and knocked the bridge down. the new bridge has robust, enormous dolphins around the piers. So if a ship even runs into it, it'll bounce off the dolphins. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate the comment, Tom. Of course, again, the investigation has just begun. And I think it's difficult to design, as our structural engineer from Morgan State was saying earlier, it's difficult to design a bridge itself that can withstand the kind of impact of this gigantic thing. It's 900 feet long, 150,000 tons of cargo on the ship. Again, the 22 members of the crew of the Dolly, by all reports, not injured, but that ship is still stuck in what remains of the ruins of the Key Bridge. We have an email from Alvidas, who says, rather than think about how to build a bridge that can withstand impact of a massive ship, bulkheads could be built that are not connected to the bridge that a ship could run into without damaging the bridge. And also tugboats should be used to guide the ships until they're out of danger of hitting a bridge. So there's a suggestion from one of our listeners. I'm sure there'll be plenty of suggestions coming down the pike to officials as they investigate this matter and figure out what to do moving forward with the Francis Scott Key Bridge. We're going to figure out, or help figure out, parts of some of the things that we can do to cope with the trauma of today's news. We're going to be speaking after a quick break with Dr. Vittoria De Lucia. She's a psychiatrist from the Shepherd Pratt Hospital. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR. Coming up later this afternoon
on the next Fresh Air, how climate-driven migration could change the face of America. ProPublica reporter Abram Lustgarten explains why tens of millions of us may flee to other parts of the country in coming decades to escape wildfires, rising seas, oppressive heat, and drought. His new book is called On the Move. Join us.
Fresh Air starts this afternoon at 1 o'clock. It's one of the updates we've recently made to our programming lineup, bringing you more news and more arts and more culture every day of the week. Fresh Air is now at 1 weekday afternoons. And this afternoon at 2, tune in for Here and Now.
I'm Scott Tong. We get advice from our go-to book expert, Tracy Thomas, on book clubs. She has tips on running them and why you might want to start your own.
You can get so much more out of a book from talking to other people about it. Regardless of what you thought of it, regardless of what they thought, just hearing different opinions, different insights on characters.
Next time in Here and Now.
Here and Now is from 2 to 4 this afternoon, then All Things Considered from 4 to 8 p.m., with Marketplace bringing us a business news update at 6:30 in the evening. Women's History Month programming on WYPR is made possible by Nurtured Well in Towson and Cremon and Graham. Temperatures in the lower to mid-50s today under mostly cloudy skies. This is WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're talking today about the terrible tragedy that occurred at about 1:30 this morning, when a cargo ship, the Dolly, crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge, destroying the bridge within seconds. The bridge ended up in the Patapsco River literally within seconds in a stunning, stunning and very rare accident. Joining us now, Dr. Vittoria De Lucia. She's a psychiatrist at the Shepherd Pratt Hospital. Dr. Lucia De Lucia, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So there is a collective trauma that our cities and people in the surrounding jurisdictions are feeling today. What emotions can we expect in these next days and weeks?
You know, one of the words that keeps being repeated by you and by the previous caller is stunning. And I think in a tragedy such as this one, the level of helplessness that one feels in watching the bridge collapse really dictates what kinds of emotions people will feel in the next coming days. So depending on how one responds to that feeling of helplessness, you could see anger, irritability, sadness, anxiety. And for a very few people, some people might even feel, have an opposite reaction of happiness and joy and feeling like, wow, this is really, every day is really worthwhile and something that we should really appreciate. So it can really run the gamut.
We have an email from a listener, Debbie, who says, I burst into tears when I heard the news. We often go 10 miles out of our way just to take the scenic route, which was the Key Bridge. I love the view of the city. And Nick says, today I'm feeling devastated for the road workers and the families of workers caught in this accident coming after the awful crash in the work zone on 695 on the west side that happened just a few months ago. No one working on roads should fear of not going home to their families. If in fact there are fatalities from this accident, and one happens to know someone or members of the family of someone who was on the bridge at this very inopportune time, Doctor, what would you suggest? What would you suggest they say? How should those people be comforted in this moment?
I would say, one, take the lead of the person who is most affected. It's important that people take care of themselves, because sometimes we tend to reach out and help people when we're not really in a stable place ourselves. And then we may take up a lot of emotional space unknowingly or unwittingly that should belong to the people who are grieving. So if those people want to surround themselves with people, that's okay. And if they need a little space to themselves, that's okay. I would say to people that they offer what they feel they can offer without being overextended, whether that means giving food or giving cards. If it's not direct personal interaction, that can be okay.
There are many people, even well before this accident, who have trepidation and reservations about crossing a bridge in a car. People have fear of bridges. I would imagine that those fears are going to be exacerbated considerably after an event like this. What's your advice to people who do experience, you know, pretty significant anxiety about going over a bridge these days?
This is a very difficult question because it comes with a very unpopular answer, which is that unfortunately, when people are faced with these anxieties, it's important to continue to do the thing that they're fearful of, because by avoiding whatever situation it is, it only adds to their fear. And I believe the caller before the break also mentioned this is such a rare event. And this is noted because it's in the news, it's in the national news, that these things rarely happen. So one of the things that I talk to about when patients are very fearful is to notice how safe they are in the moment, instead of focusing on an accident or a tragedy that isn't currently happening. So for example, if you're on the bridge saying, you know, nothing is happening now, I'm still making progress towards the other side, and noting that you are still safe in your vehicle or where you are, even though there has been an incident that was very dangerous.
Dr. Vittoria De Lucia is a psychiatrist at the Shepherd Pratt Hospital. We're talking about the trauma that people are experiencing and feeling and the sadness people are dealing with on the news that the Francis Scott Key Bridge was crashed into by a cargo ship early this morning and is now sitting in the Patapsco River. It's going to have a huge economic impact. It's going to have a huge transportation impact for people in that area, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, southern Baltimore City, and it's going to have a huge emotional impact, I think, on all of us. Let's go to the phones to Kevin, who's on the line in Lutherville. Kevin, thanks for your call. Welcome to the program with Dr. De Lucia.
Good afternoon. Yes, you know, I listened to, you know, your callers prior to the break, and I always find it interesting when we have people coming out of the woodwork to say, you know, why we could have prevented an accident. It just seems to me that there was a confluence of problems, and just from looking at the video, and that we might take a moment to give the professionals an opportunity to inspect and reflect before we start finding fault. It's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. And certainly, you know, in our society, we create phobia after phobia. And I believe that has a little bit to do with the fact that we're removed from nature as much as we are. Regardless, this is a tragedy, and I hope the best outcome for everyone involved.
All right. Well, thanks for those thoughts, Kevin. I appreciate it. And Dr. De Lucia, when it comes to assigning blame, obviously the investigation into this accident or this event is in the very nascent stages, as we've been saying all afternoon. But I wonder, does assigning blame, does determining who's at fault figure into people's capacity to process the event and to overcome the trauma that they're feeling?
It depends on the nature of the event. If there is a clear malicious aspect to tragedy, then it's important to hold people accountable to that. But as I mentioned, the feeling of helplessness is very strong in any trauma. And in an attempt to gain back control and feel less helpless, people often look to see what could have been done differently. And when people feel very angry about what happened, and there's a communal sense of grief in this way, people often can reach to anything in an attempt to find a cause and to prevent, but also in a way to ensure that it won't happen to them. So in some cases, I would say that holding people accountable is important. And in other cases, it doesn't actually emotionally progress a person away from the grief they're feeling.
And of course, this is one of many events that are particularly difficult to speak with children about. I know you work with trauma clients and patients who are both adults and children. What can parents and close people to young children say at a moment like this to help them process what's happened?
So firstly, I would say a lot of the same information for children is helpful for adults because we are in a state, again, in which we feel a little bit helpless. My first suggestion would be to turn off news outlets that are upsetting to children. You know, if you can see that they're getting agitated watching this footage over and over again, it's okay to turn off and limit that exposure. Sometimes people think that it might be helpful to see something over and over again, that it increases their empathy. I would say that this is not true, that it can just be upsetting and not helpful to anyone. I would reassure your kids that they're safe. You know, if they're at home and nothing's happening, to say, you know, you're safe now. Bring your support system together. Listen to your child and yourself without minimizing their feelings. So if they say, oh, I'm really scared, instead of saying, oh, you know, there's no reason to feel scared, you can say, you're safe. Do you want to talk about it some more? Because they may have really big feelings, and adults might have really big feelings, as we say, and we don't have to stifle that in any way. We can reassure them with facts and tell them that their feelings are valid. A really interesting thing that I've learned with some children that works well is you can say, how long do you feel like you should be afraid of this? And letting the child know that they have some control over their feelings, that this is something that they should have feelings about, but it can be limited and up to them in some ways.
That's interesting. They could pick the amount of time it's going to take to feel bad, and you give them some control in that way. That's an interesting approach. Doctor, with the fact that this is a collective trauma, I mean, I'm thinking about how the country as a whole felt at 9/11 and the terrorist attack then, and again, let me be very clear, there's no evidence that this was a terrorist event, but for people of a certain age, when John F. Kennedy was shot or when Dr. King was assassinated, there's a collective trauma, and then there's individual emotions and trauma involved. Is it important to be aware of that, to separate those two dimensions of this, individual and collective?
I think that in all trauma, it's important to reach for support. And it's for a lot of people, it's a lot easier to give support than it is to ask for support. And I think that both of these aspects are important in all kinds of trauma. So what is not helpful is othering or saying, as we talked about a little bit, blame. This is this person's fault. And also comparisons. I'm more affected by this than you are. Right. And instead saying, we have all faced this really terrible accident. Great. And what will we do to support each other?
Well, Doctor, we're going to have to leave it there. I very much appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Dr. Vittoria De Lucia, psychiatrist at Sheppard Pratt. Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, today at 5 o'clock, we'll have an update on the latest about the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse. It was hit by a cargo ship this morning in the Patapsco River. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your day.